and welcome back to Franklin Covey's twice weekly podcast on Leadership with Scott Miller, the world's largest weekly leadership podcast that after 6 years and nearly 400 episodes taped and 350 released every Tuesday and Friday, we take Franklin Covey, the world's most trusted leadership company's megawatt spotlight, and shine it on thought leaders from all different walks of life. Sometimes we interview people from inside of our global firm, people like Stephen M. R. Covey, who authored the book The Speed of Trust, Chris McChesney, the lead author of The Four Disciplines of Execution, and any number of people inside our company, including our partnership with Liz Wiseman, who wrote, as you know, one of my favorite leadership books of all time, The Multipliers. We like to also interview people from outside of the firm, people that have done remarkable things. They've conducted research. They've led themselves. Not every conversation is about leadership. We've interviewed NBA players, NFL players, people that have suffered tragedy but have been bold enough, courageous enough to come on and talk and teach through it. We've interviewed business titans, authors, experts of every walk of life. And then occasionally we love to swing that pendulum back to the theme of this podcast, which is the core topic of leadership. And today I'm delighted to interview one of my colleagues and friends, a member of the MG 100, 100 Coaches, of course, a group that Marshall Goldsmith, the iconic leadership mind, put together, some of the greatest minds in the world. And today I'm delighted. And now, this woman is both a genius and she is French, and I want to make sure I do justice to her name, and she'll forgive me and correct me when I pronounce her name. In my version, I would say her name is Hortense Lugentil, but I'm sure I have slaughtered that. Hortense, welcome to On Leadership today. Please correct the pronunciation of your name for me.
Scott, I'm delighted to be here. Thank you so much. You did great. So it's Hortense, in French you say Hortense Le Gentil, but in America you can say Hortense Le Gentil. And you did much better than that. Thank you.
You are very gracious. We have you on today because you are one of the world's most in-demand coaches, consultants, speakers. You have 3 decades of experience behind the topic of leadership. You have co-authored, as the lead author of this book, The Unlocked Leader. The tagline is, dare to free your own voice, lead with empathy, and shine your light in the world. For those that are listening and watching around the world today, we're going to talk about some different nuances and facets of leadership and what it means to be an engaging leader in 2024, which is different perhaps than even 5 or 6 years ago. Will you take a few minutes and reorient all of our listeners and viewers to your own leadership journey? We'll dive into some of the concepts in this book that you've masterfully co-written.
Yeah, so it's a journey, like you said. So I've been an entrepreneur myself. I work for large corporations also, and I became a coach a decade ago. So I had a lot of experience, and one day I found my calling, and my calling was to be a coach and to guide people to free themselves from the mind trap that holds them back, that holds us back from being who we should be, and especially the leader we should be, the human leader that we need today.
Let's talk about this concept of sort of finding your calling. I mean, that's a small phrase you put into that. But I think everyone in life is sort of looking for that moment, that sign, that validation of what's their purpose, what's their calling and meaning. Can you dive a bit deeper on that? This didn't happen earlier in your career. Will you kind of unfold and rewind? What were the signs that led you to understand you should be a leadership coach? Because everybody that I know is looking for that pivot, that moment, that validation. What can people take out of your own moment that will help them uncover theirs?
Mm-hmm. So maybe I should go back 15 years ago. So 15 years ago, I was stuck in my personal life and my professional life. And so I was lost. I didn't know what to do. And then, of course, everything went south, and I got sick, and I was stuck in bed for 4 months. So I had time to think, right? And then I had a dream. And in that dream, my grandmother, the grandmother that I just loved, you would love, absolutely loved her. She came to me in my dream, and she told me, "You have to find the path of roses." I absolutely didn't understand what she meant. You know, what are you saying? And where is it? I asked her in the dream, and she said, she just looked at me and she just smiled and she said, "You know where it is." And then I woke up, I was absolutely furious. So, you know, she didn't give me the answer. Where is the road, the path of roses? Where is the road? And then that would be later in my life when I will understand that what she meant was very, very important. What she meant was that I had to listen to my inner voice and not the outside voice. So be courageous enough to follow what I felt was good, was right for me. And then this is what I did. And when I began to do that, I really began my journey to know myself and to become the person I should be. And then this is how I found my calling. It was not in one day, because it's a journey. It's really a journey. It's not a destination. And then it would be something like, let me think, something maybe a small decade after, you know, that dream, maybe less. Then we came to that moment that, it was my calling. Because just right after, you know, this dream, I left my marriage and I became an entrepreneur. And then I will find really my calling. But I had to go through everything, this journey, to learn. And to learn how to be a leader, to learn about me. So I walked a lot. I walked a lot with me, on me. So what my grandmother meant, what does that, how can we listen better to our inner voice? And this is how I led to who I am today.
Well, a beautiful story. Truly, as you were talking, I was thinking about my own grandmother. I was thinking about my father, who passed a year ago, and what they might say to me, like everyone, just trying to figure out, you know, where should I spend my time? What are my top priorities? What do I want my meaning and calling in life to be? Thank you for sharing that very tender story. A key part of your book, The Unlocked Leader, is this concept of when a mindset becomes a mind trap. And I found that I found that invigorating. I've spent my 30-year career with the Franklin Covey Company. Dr. Covey did not invent the idea of a paradigm, but he certainly popularized it, you know, nearly 35, 40 years ago with his book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. Will you talk about what is a mindset? Remind everybody why that's so important, how they become inculcated in us, and when they become a mind trap.
Okay. So a mindset is, let's crack the brain for one second. So our brain is amazing. Our brain is always, you know, trying to find meanings, and is cooking a lot of stories for us. So the mindset, our mindset is, I would say, is our brain are connected, and with habits or with other voices. So you were told, for example, to be that kind of leader, you need to be a hero, you need to have the audience. And so you grew up like that, and it worked for a while, and you were successful. And then this is a mindset. So my mindset is, you know, what I used to think, and, you know, what I do. And it becomes a mind trap. So let me take an example. For example, you want to be perfect. Perfection is something very, you know, very useful. Not useful, but I mean very, it comes very often. Yeah. So you want to be perfect. So for a while, it was a driver because you were young, because, you know, you said, okay, I have to be perfect more and more. And you pass your exam, you are graduate from very good school, whatever it is. And then it pushed you. But at one point, when you change and you evolve in life, this mindset of I need to be perfect becomes a mind trap. And what is a mind trap? It's this obstacle, you know, what is on your way to become who you really are. And then so you are perfect. You think you need to be perfect. But first, you realize that it's absolutely not possible. You cannot have all the answers. You cannot always be goal-oriented, because this is not what the world needs today. And also, if you try to be perfect, it's hard because it's not possible. Who can have all the answers today? So the world, there is no playbook in this world today. The world is crazy. Every day something new happens. And moreover, when you become a leader, what is a leader? You want to inspire people. And people, what, you know, what they want to connect with you. They want to know you. They want, so you need to learn how to change. You move from a player to a coacher, to a quarterback, from being quarterback to being, you know, a coach. And then, you know, this is your mindset at that moment is your mind trap. You are trapped. You cannot move forward.
Hortense, take that one step further. How does someone know when a mindset has become a mind trap, and how do they change their mindset? How do they move out of it? As I was listening to you again, I was thinking, what mindsets do I have about me, my marriage, my competency, my children, the world, and which of those are mind traps, and how would I know, and how would I change it?
Yeah, so it's a belief. So you believe that. Well, for example, let's continue with this example of being perfect. And then you believe that you need to be perfect. Or you believe, if I go back to my story, you believe that, or you were told that, you know, you cannot divorce, and no, you cannot become an entrepreneur at the age of 40 or something. And then you feel that in yourself, you feel that something, you know, this mindset, this habit, this voice is holding you back. And then you know that you want to do something differently. You know that you want to try something differently, or maybe whatever it is, you know, whatever the area is, you know it, because we feel it. We feel like, oh, I wish I could. I wish I could do that. I wish I could move there. I could, whatever it is. And then you are trapped. And then to change your mindset, first, of course, you have to be aware of it, like we said, and also to face it. Face first your fears, because we are animals of habit. So we want to, you know, keep it like it is. But think about, you know, the price you're going to pay to not change, you know, this status quo or change. With a change, you can be better. You can find your own way. You can be you know, a great leader. And in not changing, nothing's going to change, and you're going to stay maybe stuck with your ideas and maybe frustrated. And then, okay, be aware of that. Face your fear. And then ask you this question. Why I am trapped? So, for example, if it's this voice who tells you that you should be perfect, who said that? So track the source. And from my experience, it could come from trauma that are not overcome, that could come from other voices.
Hortense, you mentioned the word trauma, and I want to build on that, if you will, because it's actually a part of your book as well. I enjoyed this section. Mm-hmm. About a year ago, I had the privilege of interviewing Dr. Bessel van der Kolk. He wrote the book, The Body Keeps the Score. And I made a mistake during that interview. And I want to kind of debrief it right now, because I really couldn't relate to his book very much, because I felt like I've lived a life generally trauma-free. And I think there's truth to that. When I think of the definition of trauma, I think what is happening in Gaza, what's happening in Africa, what's happening in Ukraine, what's happening in parts of America that I don't even know about. I have a definition of trauma that I feel like my life is so far from, it would be arrogant to say I have lived trauma. And in the interview with this author, I said to him, gosh, I don't even know what trauma is. Since then, I've had several people try to pull my trauma out to convince me of all of my traumas, and maybe that's good or maybe that's bad. I still think I put trauma on a different level of what's happening in Gaza and what happened in Israel on October 7th than what my life has been like. Your book is titled The Unlocked Leader. Well, I know you're not a psychotherapist, I don't think. Would you talk about the role that trauma plays in everybody's life, including people like me, that have had a fairly successful life? We've not had any major violations to our mind, our body. Mm-hmm. But everybody has some level of trauma, and it impacts, it instructs, it informs the way they lead, the way they connect or can't lead or can't connect. Take that everywhere you'd like to take that. Not so that everybody knows they have massive trauma, but all of us have some trauma, and it does instruct the way we lead.
Mm-hmm. So I think the best is to share a story. So I had a few years ago, the rare leader. He was considered to be the next CEO of his company. He was very smart, doing very well, very successful, of course, because he was considered to be the next CEO. And so in order to do that, he has to be in front of a panel of other leaders who was responsible for this process. And Scott, out of nowhere, he changed his behavior. He became very talkative. He talked a lot. He didn't listen. He was another person. And of course, he didn't get the job. So we had this conversation, and he told me, Hortense, I don't know what happened. I don't know. And then we said, okay, so let's figure out where it's coming from, because it's coming from somewhere. And revisiting his life, he remembered that when he was a student, so it was years and years ago, when he was a student, he, in order to pass an exam, he also had to be in front of a panel of different teachers. And one of the teacher didn't let him talk. So, you know, imagine this young guy who prepared and, you know, and he couldn't talk, he couldn't express himself. So he completely lost his cool. And also it became a trauma, because it was a trauma. I'm going to go back to the definition of trauma in 5 minutes. And it's not enough. It was not enough. The teacher told him, so he lost his cool, and the teacher told him, you know, young guy, I don't know what you're going to do, but I can promise you, you will never be a CEO, because I can see all your emotion on your face. So that young guy left the room with a trauma, because and thinking that, you know, he doesn't, you know, leadership is not about showing your emotions. It was not true. And so, you know, when the time came, the first time he was considered to be a CEO, everything was in his unconscious. It was not conscious of that. He didn't remember that time, but his unconscious understood, remember that time, and said, okay, so now you know what I'm going to do. I'm going to talk and talk and talk and not let anybody interrupt myself, cut myself. I need to talk. And that this is what he did, but it was not relevant in that case, not at all. And then this trauma, so if I go back to your question of your trauma, the trauma is my definition of trauma, not my definition, but definition of trauma is, it's a moment or, you know, a series of moments that triggers very strong emotion, and that trigger also your sense of safety. So that could be, you know, in this case, you know, this young guy felt this trauma. Another student maybe would not feel that, but he felt shocked. He felt in shock. And then a trauma, I like, you know, this metaphor of our brain is like a house. So you have different room in the house. So you have your bedroom and you have your kitchen, and in each room you put the right thing. So you put your bed in the bedroom and in the kitchen, the fridge or whatever. And now imagine that in the middle of your living room, you have a car. So it's a bit complicated because, having a car in your living room, imagine that you want, to watch TV. You cannot watch TV. Well, not really good because you have to, put yourself that way or whatever. And then imagine you want to talk with someone that is sitting in the sofa behind the car. You cannot. So a trauma is, it's something that is not at the, it's an emotion that is not at the right place in our brain. So our work is to take back, the car and park the car in the garage, because the place of the car is in the garage, is not in the living room. So this is what a trauma is. And each of us, we have small trauma. It doesn't have to be big, like, of course, Gaza and war and Israel and unfortunately, everything that we can name. But each of us at one point, we feel, and it arrived to me too, I was attacked. I was attacked in my car. And then it was the same. I was not aware that, it was a trauma. But I will be aware later, when I surprised myself by being, always, overreacted when I saw, a light at night. Because, in my memory, my sense of safety was triggered at that moment. And it was a very strong emotion. So I had to work on that, to let go and to go back to my sense of safety. So to put the car in the garage. So all of us at one point, we have it. And sometimes we are absolutely not conscious of it.
Hortense, you have a gift. I don't know what to name it, but whenever you are speaking, I find myself visually seeing it in my head and seeing my life. You have a gift of speaking verbally and having it come to life visually in my head. It's something that I've not experienced anybody on this podcast in 6 years. Everything you say, I'm like playing a movie in my mind, and I need to revisit that after this interview. I'm going to move on. Thank you, by the way, for taking the time to address trauma, including in your own life, and how each of us have that, need to name it, need to, quote, park the car in the right part of the home or the apartment, the garage, not the living room, and then also do the self-reflection on how that inhibits perhaps our ability to build connection with people, which is, of course, crucial to being an unlocked leader. I think my favorite part of your book is chapter 5. You title it, okay, See Yourself Differently, A View from the Outside. And you quote Bill George, of course, the famous author of True North and the former Medtronic CEO, as what he calls it, a crucible. But you pepper some stories throughout the chapter in the book about Doug Conant, the former iconic CEO of Campbell Soup that has gone on to be one of the most influential leadership minds of our generation, coaching, speaking, and writing. Will you talk about and tell the story of Doug Conant, and not just what happened to him initially, but then how it maybe took a mind trap and turned it into a mindset or such? Talk about that.
So he was... I think he was, so let me remember because I have so many stories, but yes, I remember very well this one. So he was fired. He was fired at a time when he thought that everything went very good and very well. So he felt insecurity at that time, and then he didn't understand. And the company gave him the possibility to talk with someone. I think it was a coach. But his first, reaction was, no, I'm not going to talk to this person. And this coach asked him to, and he changed his mind. In fact, I think it was in the morning, and at the end of the day, he just called back, the coach and said, okay, I want to see you. And the coach was great and it told him, okay, come anytime, come now. And then the coach made him to write, he told him, okay, now you write your story from the beginning. This is your homework. And then he came back home and said, you know, what is this homework? You know, write my story. So what should I do that? And in writing his story, he understood that he never listened to his voice. He never did the thing that he thought. He never did the thing. He didn't write his own story. He was writing a story of somebody else. And then he realized that it was a gift, you know, this, you know, trauma of being fired and didn't understand why, became a gift, and it changed completely, and it changed the path of his life, and it changed his leadership also, because he, you know, he will become a very good, you know, an advocate of, you know, listen to your own voice.
Hortense, your book is full of riveting stories like this. This is my favorite story in the whole book, is this you uncovering with Doug that his story was actually someone else's story. And I want to take just a moment and reiterate this. And I think this is a profound lesson that readers of your book and people you coach pull out, because to some extent, all of us are living someone else's story. All of us have an identity that someone else placed upon us. Our parents, our guardians, our caregivers, our teachers, our headmaster, our rabbi, our priest. And I don't know that most of us know that or admit that. It's not wrong. It's not shameful. But when I was preparing for an interview once with the famous actress Viola Davis, I read in her book with Brené Brown, she talked about the power of knowing your story. And then the next day I was interviewing Eric Barker. He wrote a famous book called Barking Up the Wrong Tree and a couple of other books. He's kind of a social psychologist. And the next day he talked about the power of knowing your story. I went home that night and asked my wife, had she ever told herself her story? She said no and fell asleep because we have three young boys that have my energy, so she was exhausted. So at the age of about 50, I got out of bed at midnight, 10 o'clock at night, and I walked around my living room with a wire whisk in my hand like a microphone. And at the age of 50, I told myself my story for the first time in my life out loud. And then I literally walked around our living room in the dark for an hour. And out loud, I told myself my story. All the truths, all the lies, all the things that people had said about me that were hurtful, that were true or not true. The things that I liked about myself, the things I didn't like, the mind traps, to quote you, that I had built around myself. And at the age of 50, I told myself my own story and then decided what did I want my story to be. What did I want to accomplish? What inhibitions, what challenges did I think I had that I wanted to overcome? And I'd like you to just to finish off this conversation today, reminding people the power of deciding their identity, of telling themselves their story, and what that can do for them in the future to unlock them as better parents, as better friends, as better lovers, as better spouses, as better leaders. Make that connection between defining your identity and telling yourself your story. How do people do that, and what will the outcome be? Thank you for your patience listening to my long setup.
No, I love it. Thank you for sharing that. So important. Let me just redefine something. The Unlock Leader, and I, you know, if I go back, you know, my story and my inner voice, this is exactly what we're talking about. Why should we, you know, free ourselves from our mind traps that we talked about before? And how do you do it? So the book is about that. How do you do it? Because it's not easy. And by challenging, finding the source, so I repeat, but finding your mind trap, you know, tracking the source and challenging, you know, the beliefs. So is it true? Is it relevant? Is it helpful? And let go. So this is a process of unlocking yourself. And why it is important? Because then, you know, exactly like in my story, then you begin to write your own story. You don't write the story of others, and that's a problem. That's why we are trapped, because I believe that everyone has a special talent, each of us. And then one day, we need to meet this special talent. You need to grow this special talent. And you need this courage to face that, to unlock yourself, and then you are free. And then you begin to write your own story. And you think about, okay, how do I want to show up as a leader, as a person? You know, what are my values? What is my why? What drives me? And then you work on it every day, because, you know, it's a new connection, a new mindset that you're working out. And you write your own story every day. And every day you have this daily, what I call daily rendezvous with yourself, and thinking about, okay, where I am in my journey of, you know, writing my own story. What do you want to achieve? What do you want, you know, others to think about you or to remember about you? What is your special talent? And, you know, again, it's a journey. It's a journey. It's not a destination. Every day we learn. And this is beautiful, because every day you learn. And when you're going to write your own story, when you will give yourself the authorization to write this own story, your own story, you will see how much joy, happiness that will come with that. And you will be even more successful as a leader, because people are going to connect with you. It's all about empathy. And empathy, you know, start with yourself. So start with yourself. What story do you want to write? Think about it.
For those listeners that can't see me, you know it's a good interview when the host is taking copious notes with a pen. I'm writing down all these insights that I'm learning. I love this concept. Give yourself the authorization to write your own story, and also have a daily round table with yourself. Hortense Legentil, how did I do there?
Perfectly. Thank you, Scott.
You are a highly in demand keynote speaker, coach, counselor, consultant, and co-author, lead author of the book, The Unlocked Leader, Dare to Free Your Own Voice, Lead with Empathy, and Shine Your Light in the World. And for those who aren't watching this interview, but you're listening to it, the book has a very simple birdcage on the cover with the door open. It's such a great metaphor for this book. Thank you for joining us today. You are a class act. You are a sage. And I've thoroughly enjoyed listening and learning from you today. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Scott, for having me. It was such a pleasure.
And we'll see you back here next week for a new conversation on leadership.